Hello, and welcome to AARC Perspectives, where we talk with members of the respiratory care community and learn about their experiences caring for patients and building the profession. I am Doug Lair, Chief Operating Officer at the American Association for Respiratory Care, and I will serve as your host for today's episode. Since 1947, the AARC has been leading the effort to advance the respiratory care profession and promote high-quality, cost-effective, patient-centric respiratory care. The respiratory care profession is ever-growing and evolving thanks to dedicated respiratory therapists around the world. Joining me today on the AARC Perspectives podcast is Ms. Dana Evans, Brady Scott, and David Eitel. Dana has been a registered respiratory therapist for more than 20 years, having worked in adult neonatal and pediatric critical care throughout her career. Currently, she is the respiratory director for the Illinois region at Advocate Aurora Health and is a director at large for the AARC Board of Directors. Dana is also the program committee chair-elect for 2023. Brady Scott is the Director of Clinical Education and Associate Professor for the Respiratory Care Program at Rush University in Chicago. He has been a registered respiratory therapist for more than 20 years as well, with clinical practice experience in adult emergency and critical care respiratory care. Brady is the Program Committee Chair for 2022. And closing out is Mr. David Eitel, who is a clinical analyst working at Intermountain Healthcare in Utah. He has been in respiratory care for 9 years with experience in management, healthcare technology, and critical care medicine. David is a first-time speaker at both the Summer Forum and Congress events, as well as a first-time attendee. Enjoy my conversation with Dana, Brady, and David. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Doug Lair coming to you from the AARC Perspectives Studio 1A at the AARC headquarters on 9425 MacArthur Boulevard in Irving, Texas. And joining me today is Ms. Dana Evans, Brady Scott, and David Eitel. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Hi, good afternoon.
Fantastic. So I've already done the bio, so everybody knows who you are by now, but I'd like to maybe touch on each of you just for a quick smidge and see if you can't just maybe share something with the audience, a little bit about yourself, maybe that they can't find on LinkedIn, your resume. David, let's start with you.
Oh, no. I'm the worst to start with. David Eitel, working with Intermountain for the last couple of years. And I really, really enjoy whitewater rafting. There's something you don't know about me.
Very, very good. And you are also, as of this summer, at the AARC Summer Forum. It was your first time attending that event, correct?
Yeah. First time attending, first time speaking. It was a great experience. I loved it.
And trust me, we're going to dive into that in just a second. Dana Evans, how about you?
Hi, good afternoon. I guess something maybe interesting about me, I've been volunteering for the AARC or my state affiliate since 2004.
Interesting. Probably a lot of people listening who weren't even born then. Well, maybe not, but still, fantastic. Brady Scott, let's jump over to you really quick.
Well, I used to be a musician. I actually used to play drums in a band with a guitar player who's now a professional guitar player and is actually the lead guitar player for Blake Shelton. So I'll let the folks listening to this podcast decide who was the better musician, him or me. But let me assure you, I am not a professional musician. So I'll let everybody here decide who was the better person in the band.
So before we get started here, I think it's important. We already talked and touched on the fact that David was an attendee and speaker at this year's Summer Forum out in Palm Springs. But Brady and Dana are part of the AARC's program committee. Brady is the 2022 chair, and Dana is going to be the 2023 chair. So let's just jump right in, if you don't mind. Brady, I'd like to start with you And we have been absent from live meetings for the most part at the AARC almost for 3 years. Matter of fact, the last time we were together for AARC Congress was in 2019, ironically enough, in New Orleans, the same place we're going to be this year. Just if you could tell, why is it so important for you to be at live meetings? What is it that you take home that's so important to you that you come and that you've actually volunteered your time to put this program together?
That's a great question. I actually think it's fairly easy to answer, frankly. You know, beyond the educational offerings, when you think about the AARC meetings, I think it's really about networking. It's about, being able to sit down and chat with colleagues from all over the country. It's about meeting new people. And really, I find that to be energizing. You know, we work really hard all year long, and I find going to the live meetings, I find myself being energized by meeting new people and find out what they're doing in their respective institutions. And so to me, it's about networking. And then now I've been going to the AARC meeting for so many years, it's about reconnecting with old friends.
100%. Dana, from your perspective, and I'm not certain how many live meetings you've attended post-pandemic, but do the rules change for you at all? Have things changed from how you approach live meetings pre-pandemic to post-pandemic?
That's a really good question. I have been able to attend several live professional conferences, if you can call us post-pandemic, in this post-pandemic world, Summer Forum being one of them that I attended. I think my approach is one of a little bit more caution, perhaps, than I would have had pre-pandemic, right? A little bit more thoughtful about, do I feel well? Do others feel well? But I really feel like a move back to normal. And I distinctly remember the first time I was back in a room with colleagues at a professional conference. And frankly, it was so exhilarating and exciting and really refreshing to be present with other professionals and to be able to have that networking again, really echoing what Brady said about the value of being together. So for me, it's as close to 2019 as I think I'm going to get, perhaps with just a smidge more caution than I might have had back then.
I think that's a great point that you made. At the Summer Forum event, the AARC offered attendees red, yellow, and green silicone wristbands. Green meaning hugs and handshakes. Yellow, I think, was, happy to say hi, let's shake hands. And then red was, keep your distance. But when I just kind of did an informal survey with my eyes looking around, almost everybody at the event had on the green wristband. So I think that we're all ready to come back. And the biggest value of our meetings is really connecting with each other. I tell you, live meetings are so, so important. My very, very first Congress, I was back in 1999. I'm dating myself a little bit. And I was at a crossroads in my career. I wasn't sure if I wanted to continue to be a respiratory therapist or not. And just being in the same room of 5,000 people, feeling the energy, when you talk about a battery recharge, I went back and back to my employer, and I was ready to just tackle the world. So, yeah, exciting times. So, David, I know, and we touched on this, that you are a first-time attendee and first-time speaker at our Summer Forum event. So I don't want to go into why you were there, because you were an invited speaker, but maybe just talk a little bit about the takeaways that you left Palm Springs with.
Yeah, I would say that I actually was filling in for somebody, when I got asked to do it. But I was super excited to go. I was going to go regardless of whether or not I was speaking, because, I'd never been before, and it was the first time we were doing one in person. and getting there was just an absolute blast. My takeaways, I think what happened, and I actually talked to a friend about this, you know, you get home 2 days after a conference and you're jazzed, you're excited, you saw everything that you wanted to see, you made so many contacts, and you're ready to hit that road running. And then like a week later, you kind of are like, well, you're back into your normal groove. It's so easy to slip back in, but it really took some time to keep my energy up. You know, I got back from the conference, I was like, I need to stay connected with these people. I need to stay connected with the people I met. Every card that I got or gave away, I went and tracked them down on LinkedIn, and I tried to, you know, send a message back to them and say, hey, it was great seeing you. Let's connect, or let's talk about this or that. Because we all kind of go back to our selective, you know, work environments, and we forget that there's this much larger world of respiratory therapy out there. And if we don't stay connected, then it feels like our problems are only our problems. And so even after one of the things I was really excited about was when I got back home, I was able to connect with one of the people that I met at the conference, and we're now starting some research together. So it's really about keeping that momentum that you have there, you gain there, and keeping it as you go home. That's something that was really important to me, because I could see it fading. And I've seen it with a few of my friends who went, and they came back and they're like, yeah, I'm excited. But I'm like, well, what are you doing? And they're like, well, life, you know, it just catches up to you.
Yeah. Well, David, I know that immediately following your presentation, which was excellent, by the way, we had to keep the room going for the rest of the day. There were other speakers behind you, so you moved out into the hallway and you had a harem, almost, if you will, of attendees surrounding you out there. And you're right, you're exchanging business cards and ideas, and it's fantastic to see that you actually have now initiated some research as a result of that. So Brady, Dana, you both are on the program committee, and I know that you had some involvement with planning of the summer forum. You know, you have liaisons on the program committee that were responsible primarily for summer forum, but in most of your efforts go into the Congress. Brady, can you just talk a little bit about what the process looks like to plan an event like that? It's Herculean, I would think.
Sure. Are you referring to the summer forum or Congress or both?
Well, just both in general. I mean, the program committee combined, sure, you know, collaborates on everything.
They do. And, you know, it first starts with, requests for proposals and hearing from membership what they think they would like to hear. And there's also a lot of discussions with the section chairs, respective sections. So think about, you know, leadership management section chairs and the education section chairs and them telling the program committee liaison who or what kind of hot topics are important these days. And it's really about putting it all together to meet the needs of those groups that year. So if you think about summer forum, it's about, you know, what's novel, what's relevant, what's timely, what has an important message for those, you know, speaking again, the summer forum, of those in the education, those educators, what's novel, relevant, and timely for those that are in leadership management. And then that same process translates over to the Congress when it's adult acute care, neopediatrics, diagnostics, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of conversation and there's a lot of homework that's done by the program committee first, to figure out what are those important topics that we must have, or sometimes we even actually call those the must-haves. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation back and forth with the program chair, specialty section chairs. And then we just start putting things together and, you know, looking for those topics and those speakers that can really bring home these points to make it worthwhile for the person who's going to spend their money to travel to the meeting. That way they can get the education that they are looking for and the quality that the ARC can bring to that. Dana, is there anything I missed there?
No, I think you nailed it. I think maybe the only other thing I would add is that we do have a pretty distinct focus on ensuring we have first-time speakers on the agenda as well, and really love the idea of having fresh perspectives and fresh ideas, and not just we love having the folks that speak regularly because they're outstanding experts in the field, and in addition to that, we love welcoming new faces and new perspectives on the agenda too.
Dana, when the call for RFPs go out to general membership, by the time all of those proposals find their way back to the committee, in many years we have well over 800 unique and individual proposals to fill about 125 to 130 total lectures. Can you just talk about the burden? And I don't know, maybe it's an easy problem to have because you have so many high quality proposals, but at the same time, you've got to find a way to whittle those 800 down to the 125, 130. Can you just talk about the responsibility that comes with that?
Yeah, it is a good problem to have, I suppose. We're very fortunate to have a good number of really high quality requests for proposals. We're always looking for more, so if you're thinking about submitting, please do. But it is difficult, right? It's a painstaking process that the committee goes through looking at speakers and deciding who can be on the agenda and who, unfortunately, maybe won't be on the agenda this year. Perhaps what they're presenting or what they're recommending isn't on that must-have list, etc. But it is very, very difficult. And I will say we're very fortunate that we have the whole team, the committee, as well as the section chairs, to talk about that. That's not a burden that any one of us bears independently. We do it together, and we have these collaborative conversations and discussions and make decisions about what makes it on the agenda. But I guarantee you, every single year, there's a handful of presentations that I'm just devastated we couldn't get on the agenda and really wish we could find a way to do that, and also recognize that no one wants to go to a 30-day meeting, but love that we have that problem.
So we've got a fantastic lineup of speakers, great, relevant, current topics that we're going to be talking about at the meeting. David, did you say this is going to be your first time attending Congress?
Yeah, first time attending Congress. I actually bought a ticket a few years ago, but wasn't able to attend due to
Oh, no.
a work emergency. So this will be the first time I'll officially be able to get in person.
So if you could maybe share with the audience a little bit, so you're a first timer. Just what are you looking most forward to at the event?
I just love the energy. If it's anything like summer forum, and I heard it's like, twice or three times as big, so I'm really excited for that. The general networking is something I'm really excited for. I got my business cards. I'm actually also going to do like some special stickers and some fun meme material for a lot of those people out there that are attending. And so there's the networking part that I'm really excited for. And then there's the level of just education. My manager went a few years ago in my place when I couldn't attend, and he just said, he's like, there's so much to see, there's so much to do. You really have to, even though you might want to go to every single like meeting with your friends, you might want to actually split up and go to different sessions and then meet back for lunch or dinner and talk about what you learned, because there's just so much knowledge to share. And it goes back to like what you're experiencing in your hospital might be something we're all experiencing, and there's solutions out there that you can really find at these meetings.
Yeah, it and speaking from some grizzled veterans with Dana and Brady, I think you're right. There is just a tremendous amount of things to do, education to consume, and then there's the exhibit hall. Brady, any favorite memories that you might have of Congress's past with the exhibit hall?
You'll have to pardon me. I was just Googling the word grizzled. I wasn't sure if that's a.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, is this a compliment day? I don't know. What do I do with this? So it's funny that you actually asked me about the exhibit hall, Doug. I actually was sitting here during today's conversation, writing down the things that I remember from my first meeting. And I think my first meeting was in 2005. I believe that was the first year for me. And I think I've been to the ARC meeting every year since. I don't think I've missed one since. And so I wrote down three things. The first was the exhibit hall. The second was open forum. And the third thing I wrote down was meeting giants in the field. And I distinctly remember, I think this must have been the first time I'd ever walked in an exhibit hall like that. And it was massive. It was bright. It was, you know, so professionally well done. And I, you know, it was all of this equipment with all of, you know, with CEOs of companies and vice presidents and sales reps and scientists and all these folks in one room, and people were just abuzz in there. And it was just so, again, it was just so energizing just to be in there. I just had never seen anything like it. And I just thought, wow, this is such a big thing. And I'd been to state-level conferences and been involved with the smaller state versions of exhibit halls, which I always enjoy too. But this was on another level. It was a different level. And I distinctly remember that actually being at my first meeting. And then I just kind of – you didn't ask me about this, but the open forum too. The open forum was really eye-opening to me about how many hospitals – were involved in solving problems and asking questions and using the scientific method to do it. And, you know, that is, was just, I was just in awe of, you know, the aerosol research, the, you know, the mechanical ventilation research, the educational research, and all the wonderful things that people were doing. And frankly, I sometimes reflect on those experiences and how it influenced my career since then, meaning that I wanted to do that too. Like, so I didn't know how to do research. I didn't know how to ask questions and do those type of things. But seeing that other people were doing it, I think it actually changed the trajectory of my career over time. So you didn't ask me about the open forum, but I just wanted to add that too. And then standing, you know, standing in a room beside the people that are on your textbooks, you know, the authors that actually wrote the textbooks that you used in school, and you realize that you're standing next to that person, and it's kind of, you know, that's really a cool feeling. It's just perhaps I'm a bit nerdy, but I felt like I was around celebrities in the field, you know, so I was kind of awestruck.
Dean Hess, the first time I saw him at Summer Farm, I was like, oh gosh, it's Dean Hess. So I know what you're saying.
My first meeting, I was fanboying and hiding behind, you know, like, shrubs in the lobby of the hotel and the pillars, like, hey, do you know who that is? Yeah, it's kind of a cool experience. And you're in this, you look at them as celebrities, and they're people just like you and me, and they have a passion for helping people. I know that the perception is with these giants in the field that oh my gosh, they must be unapproachable, or they wouldn't talk to some little person like me. And that's exactly opposite of what happens. They have a passion for helping, because every single person who's been successful in respiratory care, or probably any other industry, they became successful because somebody like a Dean Hess or a Neil McIntyre or Bob Kaczmarek, or the list goes on, took the time to mentor them, to talk to them, to teach them. And so I would just encourage people who are going to New Orleans not to hesitate to walk up maybe to the author of one of your textbooks or somebody at the lectern. They will be happy to chat with you for sure. Dana,
can I chime in to say that I'm sure grizzled veterans like Dana and myself were happy to meet.
I mean, I'll talk to you as long as you don't call me grizzled.
Grizzled. I just looked it up. Apparently, I think it means we have gray hair. That's what I can tell, but I'm not sure.
You guys are never going to let this one go, are you?
No, but you're right. I mean, I will tell you, just to piggyback off that briefly, Doug, it's been a real highlight of my career to, again, to use Dean Hess, who's, you know, one of the most famous respiratory therapists in the world. When I met Dean Hess, I was awestruck, but to realize Dean Hess is a super nice guy. It's super nice and funny, and just, and somebody now that I enjoy seeing and shaking his hand and seeing him at all these meetings. It's been really cool to meet people like him and others.
Yeah. Dana, Brady touched on the open forum, and I just want to make sure, because we might have some attendees that don't understand what that term is or what it means. Could you just talk to a little bit of the listeners about what our open forum offers attendees at the Congress?
Yeah, so I think open forum is an exceptional opportunity for young young researchers that want to learn more about research, and just for those that are looking to see what's happening out there in the research space and what great projects are happening really all over the world. Summer Forum, I kind of think, is like a buffet of data, right? So you come into the room and there's this group of amazing folks from everywhere who have done great work and are presenting their abstract research for the first time. And hopefully you'll later see those full articles in press and have had the opportunity to speak with the authors and folks doing the work and really learn about things that are not even really published yet in full. And for me, going to Open Forum triggers so many great ideas and things that I want to take home and implement right away. So just, you know, a great learning experience that's quite different than a formal presentation. It's truly about the data and the science. And even if you have no aspirations of doing research ever, and there are lots of people like that, being with folks that do it and learning how to read it and interpret it is immeasurable in value. So I think the Summer Forum is a must. Particularly for first-time attendees, but anyone that goes. And one of the great things about the way we do Summer Forum is it's broken up by content area. So if you're a neonatal and pediatrics...
Open Forum.
If you're a neonatal and pediatric specialist, you can go to that track, and there's a leadership track, and so you can really walk into the room and see research projects in the area of your specialty.
Now, David, I know that you said that this will be your first Congress, but I know that you've been actively involved in research at Intermountain. Have you contributed to any research that's been presented at an open forum at ARC Congress?
Oh, that's a good question. There might have. You know, some of our leaders have, I think, attended for years before myself. And I think that's was part of my growth as an RT, is I contributed to a lot of projects where people would ask me, like, hey, can you get this information? Or, hey, can you, you know, just collect this type of small detail? Specifically, you know, my knowledge base is a little bit in productivity and kind of a lot of that clinical business stuff. So it's definitely possible. But I also teach the local college at Utah Valley University, and we've been trying to help promote our students grow and do poster presentations to help grow their skills so they can bring it to Congress as well. So hopefully we'll have some stuff from our recent graduate groups coming in the next year or two.
Brady, there's so much more to talk about than Open Forum, but it is such an important part of the meeting. Just to make sure that our audience and our listeners know, you don't have to be a funded scientific researcher with a research lab and everything else. I mean, can you just share a little bit about the level of simplicity from just evaluating a process improvement tool in your department? I mean, this is not a highly sophisticated, I mean, some of the research is for sure, but it doesn't have to be.
No, that's right. I can give you my own example if you want. I mean, this coming year at the summer, at Open Forum in New Orleans, as members of our team will present both funded research and survey research that we conducted on a departmental budget. And so I think that you'll see a mix of both of that. You know, and sometimes I think Dana hit on something a minute ago that really struck me about Open Forum and the amount of times I've done this. Like, it's sometimes when you go to the Open Forum and so, for example, like in a management leadership type situation, it's looking at like a quality improvement project that team had ran through their IRB so they can present the information at a meeting. And then you meet the authors, you meet the team, and then you wonder why you haven't implemented it yet in your own facility or a version of that. I've done that so many times. Like, why are we not doing that? And it's really a great way. So you don't have to be a funded researcher to benefit from going and listening to what other folks are doing. So I think the beauty of the open forum for, again, folks like myself that started gaining interest in research, is you can see the various types of research that can be done. You can see how it's presented. You can see how the results are discussed. You can see the implications that it might have at the bedside. So, again, our own team, we're going to present during one of the sessions, will be a funded study. It was a funded study. It was a randomized control trial and all that. And then, you know, the other, at least another project that I'm involved with was survey research, where we created a survey. We validated the instrument. And then we sent it around to various groups, and that wasn't funded. It was something that we did as actually one of a graduate student's project, and that we actually have it now submitted for publication. And so you'll see everything when you're there, all different levels of research, and like Dana had mentioned, in all different areas, right? So if you're neonatal pediatrics, if mechanical ventilation is your thing, if aerosol science is your thing, if education science is your thing, you'll find it in the open forum.
Yeah, absolutely. Dana, so I'd just like to piggyback a little bit off of our previous conversation with the exhibit hall. And I know that one of the biggest aspects of going into the exhibit hall is, number one, being able to see and touch and manipulate all the latest and greatest in technology. But it's amazing the level of content expertise that is possessed by the clinical specialists that are there representing companies at each booth. So that's fascinating. So it's a great opportunity for you to have conversations, clinical conversations, with content experts in the booth with their equipment, being able to talk about some of the challenges that you have. But there's also another component of Congress in which our industry partners have an opportunity to share that expertise, and that are the industry-sponsored educational sessions. Can you just touch on that for a minute?
Yeah, so the industry-sponsored educational sessions are really awesome. They happen outside the agenda of Congress itself, so often we'll have those sponsored events usually in the morning before the day starts. This is content, again, that comes from our vendor partners, but can be really specific in their specialty area. So I've had the distinct pleasure of attending many of those over the years with really great presenters, you're right, and clinical specialists on all sorts of topics that are of interest to me that I want to learn more about. So they are a really great adjunct to Congress and a great way for you to get information specifically from a company or a vendor that you may have interest in. So for me, generally what I've done, if I have, you know, a really deep interest in something that they're presenting, I'll go, and then often I'll continue that conversation in the vendor hall with the exhibitor at their booth. So I think they're valuable. They are really early, so I know sometimes folks don't want to get up that early to go to them, but they are so, so valuable. And I would encourage folks, and in particular first-time attendees, but really anyone, to attend, try to attend at least one, because there's so much value in those.
There is. David, let's jump back to you, and I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. How many hours of continuing education per year or every other year required in Utah for you to keep your license?
I'm not the expert here. I think it's 30 units every 5 years.
So every 5 years. So you're talking about six per year. So I want to share with everybody that if you just the AARC Congress alone has more than 20 hours of continuing education, well more than enough than what you'll need in a year to keep your state license. And that doesn't even include the sessions that are offered by our industry partners. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about this year's location, which is New Orleans. If you are a foodie, if you love war history, if you love beignets, if you love French Quarter and reliving some of your college years, on Bourbon Street, I'm telling you, New Orleans is the place to be. If you want to talk about destination locations, you can't. Everything is there in New Orleans. Anybody, I know that Dana, Brady, you've been to New Orleans before for this meeting and probably others. Any memories, anything that stands out to you that you love most about New Orleans?
My very first Congress was in New Orleans, so it very much hold a special place in my heart for that reason, right? But yeah, I think if I'm not in the exhibit hall and if I'm not in the meeting sessions, you'll find me at Cafe Du Monde having chicory coffee and beignets. I like it so much that I order it around the year. I had it for breakfast this morning. I love it. There's so many. Yeah, I'm committed. There's so many.
That is commitment.
Really awesome and unique things about New Orleans to do. And yeah, Bourbon Street is a lot of fun, can be a little dangerous, but a lot of fun. And so many great things to do. So if you've never been to New Orleans, it is absolutely worth the trip. You'll have a great time. And if you've been many, many times, you'll know where to find me at the coffee house.
I just think my experiences in New Orleans are first of all, similar with great coffee and beignets, but just the dinner in the evening, again, with those colleagues and friends that you've had for years. And it's like, we're already texting with each other. Where are we going to go? Like, what night are we going to go on? Where are we going to go? What are we going to go see? And again, I think that really I really think it speaks to some of the value that I personally find in going to these conferences. Beyond the world-class education and the speakers that we have that are fantastic, it's networking and meeting new friends, but it's also coming together with some of your old friends and then enjoying a place like New Orleans and trying a new restaurant. And that just makes me look forward to going down there. I just think it's exciting. It's so much energy in the place, you know, the bands that are playing, the horns and all kinds, you know, so, walking down the street and it sounds like the quality of the music, if that's what your thing, is just wonderful in New Orleans. It's just a great time there.
I love going to place and just listening to jazz in New Orleans. It's just so much fun. You can't beat it. And I don't know if you know this, but I hear Bananas Foster was invented in New Orleans. So I like to have that when I go down there for fun too.
Well, they also, interesting fact, I think almost every day of the year have parades. So you're going to see second line bands and trombone players and tuba players marching down the street as part of some sort of parade. So we could talk about New Orleans and ARC Congress and what's going to happen this year, probably for another hour or two. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of time. I would like to touch on something that's going to be happening over the course of the next few weeks, and that's going to be the opening of our request for proposals for 2023. So Dana, you're going to be the program chair for the committee next year. That's going to be determined, you know, what content are we going to have on next year's platform and on the agenda. So I know that we had talked earlier that there are 800 on average proposals that come in. Do you have any advice for somebody who's going to be writing a proposal and they have an idea, or maybe they have a recommended speaker that they'd like to see? What are your thoughts on how to draft a good proposal?
I think the first thing I would say is ignore that 800 number, because no one should be intimidated by that. Like, it doesn't matter if we get 8 or 800. There's always room for new folks to present things, so please don't let that number scare you. But, you know, I get asked this question all the time. What does a good proposal look like? What should I speak about? I really want to talk, but I just don't know what to talk about. And I always say, you know, to those folks to think about, what are you excited about? What are you passionate about? What are you working on every single day at work? What do you, you know, if you're doing research, what are you researching on? I think that's great to present on, but a lot of folks aren't. So what is monopolizing your everyday? What have you become an expert on because you've been dealing with it day in and day out? And that could be pediatric bronchiolitis. It could be a productivity tool like David. It could be adult mechanical ventilation like Brady. It could be a host of things. So really starting with the topic is important, and you should have a connection to it. And then writing what you're going to talk about, right? So a good RFP should be short and concise. You know, usually a paragraph is enough. And just tell us what your idea is. The good news is if it's written weirdly, or if you've got grammar or punctuation issues, we're going to fix that for you, so you don't need to sweat any of that. What we're really looking for is good, solid ideas for topics that are relevant and timely to our members and to our attendees. The other way to find things, if you're curious what's relevant and timely, so if you have an idea and you're not sure if it matters to folks, I usually look to the most recently published literature to see what other people are talking about. I look on AARC Connect and see what's coming up in the discussion groups. I talk to my colleagues and peers about what's really important to them, and then that kind of helps guide me when I write my own RFPs and then when I'm evaluating those that have been submitted.
Brady, I'll ask you the same thing, but rephrase it. Is there anything that you would recommend that people submitting a proposal should shy away from or stay away from that might be a red flag for the committee?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think that one is submitting in way too many submissions, right? Meaning that, you know, we realize that you can probably speak on several topics, but really we're looking for some expertise. And then I think Dana said, you know, what are you working on? What are you becoming an expert in? You know, if you submit a topic in adult acute care and pediatrics and two in diagnostics and one in management and another one, and it becomes difficult for us to understand what your expertise might be. And, you know, we're not looking for, with lack of better terms here, like a book report, right? And we're not looking for somebody to stand up and just read off a bunch of slides about a topic. We're looking for an expert who can sit in a room and teach and talk about something they know a lot about. They know the literature about, the evolution of the literature, and they can handle the questions and that's really a big thing, Doug, that I would say is to try to avoid, is kind of sending a proposal in all areas and hoping one sticks. I think that's a red flag. You know, it just seems it's hard to understand what that person's expertise would be, and then which one of these areas would be best for them to sit into a room that may have a couple hundred people sitting in it and speaking on a topic at that level of expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would encourage people to reach out to the committee themselves, reach out to Dana or Brady or your respective section chair. They each have liaisons on the committee that they work with. If you're not certain about a topic, or if you'd like to run it by somebody just to put it through the, you know, and get it vetted, again, each of these individuals are more than happy to help. David, I'd like to close with you if we could. We've talked a lot about how you had been a first timer at Summer Forum, how this is going to be your first time at Congress. For our first time attendees out there, or those who hope to be, what did you do in preparation for your first time visit to Summer Forum? And it applies to Congress as well, but what were some of the things that you look back that you're like, gosh darn it, I probably should have done that too? We'll let you finish out the podcast for us today.
Great. Oh man, well that's big. First of all, thanks for asking those questions, because I'm working on proposals and I'm like, you know, what's going to be best, or you know, what's going to be the best way to do that. So no, I really appreciate what we talked about so far. In terms of like my bucket list or checklist, yeah, there's definitely a thought of you need to come prepared. This is an exciting thing to do. If you get to go, if you know this is your first time going, I'm really excited. But you got to do your homework a little bit. Go hit up LinkedIn or Google, whatever. Start looking at some of the companies that are going to show up, or some of the vendors that you might want to talk to. The goal is to maximize or leverage this time. It's a work vacation. I mean, you really should be working on growing yourself, the job you're doing, or even looking into the future. So knowing ahead of time who's going to be there and who you want to talk to. So pick a few people on LinkedIn, maybe connect with them beforehand and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you in person. Can I, you know, buy you a cup of coffee? Can I come to you for dinner one night? And just, you know, get an idea of what's big in your life right now. Then come prepared, obviously, with like, you know, a notebook, some business cards, things that are going to help you kind of make those professional contacts. And then really, I think one thing I wish I had done better in summer form was like, take it slow. There is so much to do. There is so much. I mean, you could spend a whole day and talking to one person. And so pace yourself, you know, at the end of every night, don't necessarily stay up till 2 a.m. talking at the bar, you know, reminiscing war stories from the hospital during COVID. You know, take your time, digest the day, take some notes down and think about what your action items are before you leave the conference, right? Before you actually get on your plane and you go back to your normal life, think about those, you know, whether it be a small list of three things or a big dream list of like 10 things that you want to take home and implement. You really need to do that because that's how you leverage this forward, how you move yourself forward. And then the last thing, of course, is like have some fun. Like Palm Springs was great. I got to do a lot of things I'd never done before on a trip, and I'm really excited for New Orleans, like the food and the experience and the ambiance. I've decided to extend my trip a little extra to have some fun and try to see everything I can. So I'm really excited for that. And then lastly, yeah, just like enjoy yourself. Pick one thing that's like a must do before you go, whether it be, you know, talk to a specific vendor or have a specific experience, and really try to hit that, because that'll make it memorable, and that'll make it so that you really take what you're learning there home with you. And that's my goal, so that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, David. I think that's fantastic. And you know, go in with the plan, go in with an itinerary and agenda, and if you can't come away with multiple things that are going to help you push your career forward, you're probably not trying hard enough, because there is information to consume, there's people to talk to, network with, bounce ideas off, schedule research projects with, as David did. But I would be remiss to share that if I didn't share that this year is the 75th anniversary of the AARC, and we'll be celebrating that in a big way. I don't want to disclose too many of the surprises that we have at the meeting, but there will be a big 75th anniversary birthday party on the evening of day three of the event, which is open to all attendees, and so we hope to see you there. It will be a blast. Brady, Dana, David, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. You guys are always a wealth of information. And David, we really enjoyed your perspectives as a first-time attendee. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, by the time you probably hear this, it will be about 3 weeks or so since the devastation of Hurricane Ian that impacted our Florida members. It's important to know that the AARC does have a disaster fund that supports AARC members during this type of need, and I would encourage you to go to the AARC website if you would have any such desire to help support your professional brethren who were impacted by this devastating hurricane. Thanks again, everyone, and always remember, when you can't breathe, nothing else matters. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to AARC Perspectives. Be sure to check out our show notes page for information about today's episode, as well as links to our other podcast episodes. Be sure to know when our next episode airs by subscribing to our podcast. Until next time, my friends, keep on supporting the respiratory therapy profession.